Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 147. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to India, to Kerala. Learn about beaches and backwaters, Hindu rituals, and of course the food, today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before I get into today's interview, I do have a few news stories for you. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is sponsored by BudgetTravel.com. Go to budget.com/travel to save money on your next rental car. In the first news story, if you happen to work in the airline security industry, this is something you would not want to show up on your performance evaluation. In Brisbane last week, a large bag with bomb written across it passed through the Qantas check-in and security screening before baggage handlers finally caught it, and they shut down for 40 minutes the bag system as they checked into what was going on. In the Better News department, the CEO of JetBlue is planning on taking a 50% pay cut in solidarity with all of the other cutbacks that are happening in his airline industry. Now, granted, he makes $500,000 a year, so it's a little less suffering for him, but still, I think, a good move. Well done. And then, it might be harder to get places because of the rising cost of airfare, but there are now more places to go. UNESCO has added 27 sites to its World Heritage list. This is the list, if you're not familiar with it, of some of the best places in the world to see, things that are thought to be of general value to the whole world community. 19 new sites fall in the cultural category. They include the historic center of Camagüey, an inland village in Cuba founded by the Spaniards in 1528, the Armenian monastic ensembles, three structures in northwest Iran that are dedicated to the Armenian Christian faith, and the wooden churches of the Slovak part of the Carpathian Mountain area, which consists of eight structures built between the 16th and 18th centuries for the Roman Catholic, Protestant, and Greek Orthodox faiths. The natural sites include Surtsey, a volcanic island in Iceland formed between 1963 and 1967, and the Monarch Butterfly Biosphere Reserve in Mexico, and the Socotra Archipelago in Yemen in the northwest Indian Ocean. Check out that whole list and other information about news stories that I picked up in travel in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Megan Fitzgerald. Megan is an expat career and entrepreneur coach. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And we brought on, now we're actually talking to Megan in Italy because you are an expat, not just an expat coach, but you have come to talk to us about India and particularly a place in India, Kerala, that I hadn't heard of. So I'm interested in hearing more about your trip to India. Let's start, though, with you're an expat. Why are you living in Italy?
Both my husband and I kind of have wanderlust. Travel is an important part of our life. And so we've spent probably the past 8 or 9 years traveling and living in different places. Through our travels, we fell in love with Rome, and we've decided to settle here. And I think that we'll probably be here for, I don't know, a good long time. Italy is a fantastic place to live. I encourage everyone to come and visit. It's a fantastic lifestyle. It's an amazing place to live.
I ran into somebody just this week whose memory of Italy, their memory of Rome, they said was predominantly diesel fumes, and I was so sad. We had had such a wonderful experience in Rome that I can certainly understand somebody living there, and it's always sad for me when someone else goes there and doesn't click with a place that is as wonderful, but is obviously as vibrant as Rome is.
Wow, that's surprising. Maybe they were spending a lot of time on a motor scooter and a lot of time in traffic.
That could be.
Wow, that's unfortunate. Rome is an amazing city. As an expat, there's a thriving expat community here and lots of people who enjoy Italy and travel. So it's a great place to be, and it's a great place to be as an expat.
Now let's talk about India. What drew you to India? What was the reason for the trip, or why India?
As I mentioned, both my husband and I are very passionate about travel, and there are several destinations which I think hardcore travelers always end up going, and India is one of those places. And we hadn't been, and we've been planning for many, many years to go. Our trip to India was actually our honeymoon, so we decided that we would take 3 weeks and really do India as much as one can do in 3 weeks. So because it was our honeymoon, we really kind of spoiled ourselves and allowed ourselves some extra time and really indulged a bit in exploring the area, not just doing a quick 2-week trip and not staying in hostels, which was always a nice thing, to come back to air conditioning and not sleeping in bunk beds.
That's probably India, not as appropriate, yeah.
Yeah. We started off our trip in India in Rajasthan.
Okay.
And Rajasthan is the area where most people think about India. They think about the monuments, the Taj Mahal, the Red Fort, a lot of the very historical cities and forts. All of them are in Rajasthan. So we spent time there, but we decided that the second half of our trip, we would go down south and we would go and experience a very different part of India, and that was Kerala. And that's, I think, what would be interesting for folks to hear about tonight, since I think a lot of people have probably heard about Rajasthan, probably read about Rajasthan, but I'm not sure too many people know so much about Kerala.
I certainly didn't. That's one of the things that intrigued me as you were pitching the different places you'd been, why we ended up talking about this. What stands out as a highlight from Kerala?
There were so many things that were amazing about Kerala. Kerala has a very rich set of cultural traditions, and one of the cultural traditions is a theater dance performance called Kathakali. And to go to a Kathakali performance is really an incredibly unique experience. It's kind of a theatrical, ritualistic dance. They have elaborate costumes and makeup, and I would highly recommend anybody who goes to Kerala to make sure that they catch a Kathakali experience. The cuisine was amazing. I love the flavor of coconut, which is in many of the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Kerala means the land of coconut.
Oh, okay.
All
right.
All of the fish was really fresh, and everything was full of coconut. So that was really fantastic. And then it's fantastic. It's really got interesting architecture. It's a combination of Indian architecture and culture and Dutch and British and Portuguese culture that each one of those countries had occupied parts of Kerala for a time. So it's an interesting cultural mix. And in general, I think that because it has so much natural beauty, it has a tropical landscape, and you don't really see much of that in India. So that kind of tropical climate was really just a real treat.
And let's put on the map, we're talking southern India on the coast.
Correct. It's at the very, very south tip of India on the west coast there, yes.
Okay. And as you said, we're in a tropical area, and obviously if coconut is so predominant, we're seeing a lot of coconut trees, and so I'm picturing very, very lush and green.
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, as you fly in, all you see is green coconut trees. And you think, where are people living? So it's quite lush.
And then relatively flat area, not mountainous?
Relatively. I mean, there are plantations and tea and spice plantations.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
And there are some hill towns a bit farther away outside the city where they do have gorgeous views of the sea. But relatively speaking, I mean, comparative to like the Himalayas or something, yes, it's relatively flat.
Well, because I knew there are the tea plantations in southern India, and I just wasn't sure how close you were to some of the hilly regions there where a lot of the tea is grown. Okay.
Well, definitely one of the towns we spent some time in, Cochin, is near the hills and the plantations, which we did not get to, but were highly recommended.
Okay. And then what was your itinerary in the Kerala region?
Well, we flew into Kovalam, which is a city at the southern tip of Kerala. Mm-hmm. And Kovalam is known for its beaches. And since we had just spent a week and a half tromping around Rajasthan looking at monuments, we were ready for a few days at the beach.
Sure.
So we stayed at a place that was right near the beach. And so we spent our days relaxing on the beach, walking along the coast. We ended up taking a trip around some canals. We spent some time attending some cultural performances. It was very relaxing. And then after that, we went farther north to city Cochin, which is a really fantastic city that has so much going on. That's one of the areas that was founded by or was settled by the Dutch and the Portuguese and the Brits. So you have an interesting cultural mix there, and you can see it in the architecture and the art. And we spent time in Cochin, and then we took a few small day trips out to Alleppey and some of the smaller areas there where the backwaters are. Mm-hmm. Now, another big thing about Kerala is it has over 40 rivers and canals, and they're called the backwaters. And the backwaters is a very fascinating area. You take a boat and you curl along these little canals, and there's wonderful tropical trees and birds and animals. It's an amazing, amazing trip. And you'll see people on the edge of the canals washing clothes or kids playing in the water or just daily life, daily village life. So the time in the backwaters was quite interesting. And anybody who goes to Kerala, I would make sure that they put that on their itinerary.
What was the biggest surprise in Kerala?
I think the biggest surprise was that people seemed to be very comfortable in their own traditions, but yet they were very comfortable with a large tourist population. They seemed to be very warm and welcoming. People invited us into their homes, taking pictures. It wasn't a problem. People were very comfortable with us taking pictures. But yet the cultural traditions, their daily life was very simple. It didn't seem like they had appropriated a lot of more Western conveniences and things that I find when I go to certain places that are quite touristed. If the population seems to engage with tourists, they tend to, I don't know, lose some of that authenticity, if you will. I didn't find that at all to be the case in Kerala.
What was your best day that you had in this part of the trip?
One of the best days was one of the days that we spent on the backwaters. Mm-hmm. It was very peaceful. It was a lovely day, just floating down the canals, taking pictures. Another fantastic day was just walking around Cochin. There are all sorts of little communities, poking in and out of shops. There are lots of antiques and teas and spices and art, and taking pictures and engaging with people. They were quite friendly. So I really felt like we got a really good taste of daily life there. Those 2 days really stand out in my mind.
Okay. And what did you do for preparation to figure out what you wanted to do in Kerala? What did you use, guidebooks or?
Because this was our honeymoon, so I did a bit of research beforehand. We mm-hmm. wanted to make sure, you know, we had a place to stay and that kind of thing. So we did buy a guidebook. We did do a lot of research online. We're travelers, so
right.
We have friends who travel. And so all I had to do was kind of ask people where to go in India. Do you know someone who's gone? Can you put me in touch with somebody? So I spoke to quite a number of people who'd been there and made some recommendations. So I had firsthand knowledge, which not everybody may be mm-hmm. privy to.
And of the advice that you got, what turned out to be just really great advice for you? And then what maybe not as good a fit for you?
Some of the best advice was the cuisine. You must try this. I really enjoy food. So for me, trying different cuisines is fantastic. And when you're a tourist and you go to some of the more touristed areas, you can get some really bad food. So we knew where to go to get some really fantastic food and some really great tea and some really great views where we can just sit and enjoy ourselves and not be sitting with a mob of tourists. We're not big shoppers, and we like to sort of pick and poke along the way, but I would never want to encourage us to go to one area of town in Cochin, in Mahatma Gandhi Road, and it's, oh, you know, you'll get all this great shopping, these great deals, and we ended up spending probably a whole afternoon there and felt like it was just a complete waste of time.
Hmm. Okay. So maybe for somebody who was a big shopper, that would have been a good experience, but not so much for you, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We talked about food, and you said that there were some good recommendations. Did you have particular restaurants that you would recommend or particular dishes?
most definitely.
Things with coconut. I think we established that.
Yes, yes, most definitely. There is a traditional Kerala feast called sadya, and it's served on the banana leaf. And they have several different dishes that are arranged on it. There's a sambar, a rasam, a pachi, a toran. Obviously, people won't know what these are, but some of them have heavy coconut flavors. Others are kind of spicy. And unlike northern food, you tend to eat directly with your fingers, and you don't have the bread there. So you use your fingers, you have these piles of different flavored foods. Sometimes you mix them together. It's a whole feast, and you're eating off of banana leaf. So I would highly recommend, if you can go someplace that serves a sadya, that you do that. In general, because it's on the coast, the fish is just fantastic.
Okay.
So it's always fresh, simply prepared, very delicious.
I saw in your pictures you sent, wonderful pictures, by the way, pictures of the fishermen, for instance, so I figured we'd be getting a fair amount of fresh seafood there.
Yes. Well, my husband adores, both of us enjoy photography, but my husband is quite an accomplished photographer, so for those who appreciate photography, kudos to my husband. I have been enjoying them,
yes. Okay. And particular restaurants?
Not so much. I can say that in Cochin, there was a place called the Kashi Art Cafe. It was a lovely little place. They had interesting art on the walls. They had good food. And they have sitar performances several nights a week.
Hmm.
So that would be a good place I'd recommend. In Cochin again, the Taj Malabar. The Taj is a very nice hotel there.
Okay.
But they have a restaurant called the Malabar. And it's right on the tip of Wellington Island. So you can sit outside. And they have fantastic food. It's kind of a selection of southern and northern Indian food, and you get a great view overlooking the water. I definitely recommend there for lunch.
What do you wish you'd known before you went?
I don't know that it's so much that I wish I'd known something, it's just that I wish I had more time. For me, I'm a very curious person, and I love learning, I love exploring, and so everything for me is just a new experience, a new opportunity to learn and explore. So I didn't really need to know anything in particular, just as long as we've got a place to eat, all the logistics are set up, then the rest is just part of the adventure.
Language. I'm assuming that we have easy access to English by most of the people, at least in the tourist industry. How about outside of that? Communication problems at all, or
just a few, but nothing that presented real difficulties. I mean, most people in the tourism industry do speak enough English to get by. We normally are a little bit more off the beaten path kind of folks, but this time we took it a little bit more relaxed, and with our honeymoon, we didn't want to be traipsing around the jungle or anything. So we stayed in places where a proper hotel with everybody who spoke English wasn't a problem. I think we did, in the backwaters area, we did have a little bit of problem in explaining to someone where to drop us off, but we managed to get back to where we needed to go. So in terms of communication, if you stay in the main areas, you don't go way off the beaten path, it shouldn't be a problem in India. I mean, it's not like China or other places like that. So.
Sure. One warning you would give.
Oh, okay. Okay, in India, one negotiates. Everything is negotiable.
Okay.
Okay, and a lot of people from Western cultures are used to when someone says something is this price, they pay that price. Well, everybody expects you to negotiate and to negotiate hard. So if you go in a shop, you won't really see price tags. You ask the shopkeeper, you know, how much is this? They'll give you a price. My suggestion to you is cut the price in half and start there. And the Indians are fierce negotiators. It's part of the process of shopping. It's part of the process of securing a taxi. And so I would encourage you to sharpen up your negotiation skills and toughen up your skin a bit, because I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to negotiating. My husband is much more seasoned than I at this, but I have to say, but by the end of the trip, my skin was definitely a lot tougher, and I was negotiating with the best of them. But do not pay full price for things, because they know you're a tourist. They know that you're not seasoned about things, and they may throw up their arms and say, oh, no, you know, this is handmade, and 20 people have worked on it for 50 hours. They will take you for a ride, so just be prepared.
The most memorable person you met?
I met a really lovely man. He was a doctor, and he was there in India studying Ayurvedic medicine. And actually, this is something that might be of interest to your listeners. Kerala is very well known for its Ayurvedic medicine, and people come from all around the world to stay there and to go to these Ayurvedic medicine centers and get massages and learn yoga and this kind of thing. And the man that I met there, he was a very, very kind man, and I hadn't really known too much about this area of medicine. And we sit down, and he kind of explained to me what it was all about, and he explained to me how people can integrate this into their lifestyle. And he was just a very lovely man. He gave us the name of some people to contact to learn more about this area and also made some recommendations for us, too, when we were in Kerala. He just took a lot of time, and I think, in general, the people in Kerala were just really friendly and lovely and welcoming and not at all resentful or hostile towards people. There was a real genuineness to the people, which is nice.
As we start to wind this down, your husband took a lot of pictures, gorgeous pictures. What picture do you look at and it just brings you right back to Kerala? What's the quintessential picture that captures your trip?
It's so hard because there's so many moments.
You can give me a couple.
I might mention a couple. There is one there that you have, which is pictures of the Kathakali dancers.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see the man painting, preparing for his performance. They spend over an hour preparing. That performance was extraordinary. You can witness the whole preparation process, and then they go through a process of explaining the history of the dance and the performance and what everything means. That was quite an amazing evening, and the pictures that my husband got for that evening were fantastic. I think, too, we spent some time in Cochin at a beach where there are Chinese fishing nets, which are quite well known, and again, it's another place I would recommend visiting. We were there right at sunset. There were children playing on the beach, and the sun was setting, and you see the Chinese fishing nets there sort of fluttering in the wind. Whenever I see pictures of, I'm not sure what pictures are in that bunch, but whenever I see pictures of the beach there, it really just brings me back to that really perfect evening.
Okay. If you had to, and here's a challenge for you, summarize the area in three words. What three words would you use?
Cultural, tropical,
and
rich.
Okay.
Rich not in the monetary sense, but just very lush, rich tropical scenery, rich culture.
Well, Megan, I thank you so much for being on the show. Megan Fitzgerald has been our guest. Again, you are an expat career and entrepreneur coach. And where can they learn more about your work?
You can visit me at careerbychoice.com, or you can learn a little bit more about what I do on my blog at careerbychoiceblog.com.
Thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us more about your trip to India.
Oh, my pleasure. And if there's anybody who wants to know more about Kerala or have some recommendations, feel free to let Chris know, and he can put you in contact with me. I'd be happy to help you out.
Thanks so much.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Chris.
In the internet resource portion of the show, I do have one resource for you that I've found entertaining, and that is onthisveryspot.com. And it is a travel history combination website, and it's categorized so you can say I'm interested in chemistry, and then it will give you information about Louis Pasteur or Alfred Nobel, and if you click on them you can find that they are mentioned in the National Inventors Hall of Fame in Akron, Ohio, or you can look up by religion, or you can look up by famous criminals and find out where was the birthplace of John Wilkes Booth. And if you are also a lover of both history and travel, you might enjoy onthisveryspot.com. In news from community, I had a couple really good comments about the last show, The Island of Dominica, and they were from Zoe and Amanda, and both of them noticed that we had the size of the island a little wrong there. We said 5 by 5 miles. It's actually 29 by 16 miles, still not that large, but that makes more sense in terms of fitting in 365 rivers and 70,000 people. And Zoe also recommended a particular travel agent if you're interested in going to Dominica, and that's Barefoot Travel. And you can see a link to that in the comments on that particular episode. And Zoe also agreed with Eddie on the spectacular diving there and recommended the Al Dive Center, or the Cabritz Dive Center as particular places you might try out if you want to do diving. Amanda, who actually was on Dominica with the Peace Corps for a few years, sent a very long and very detailed entry that I won't try and read everything about, but let me hit a few of the highlights from what Amanda sent in. There are huge undeveloped white sand beaches, but you need to ask locals where they are and how to get to them. You'd probably be the only one on them, and I suspect you have to trespass through someone's coconut plantation to get to them, but once there, they are little tide pools with anemones, champagne reefs, because of the bubbling volcanic activity, and one beach has a swimmable freshwater river that pours into the ocean right there. The crater at Scott's Head, your guest referred to, I was told was created by a meteorite, so it's a straight-walled circular drop-off. The parrot on the flag is the Cicero, which is endemic. The island also changed hands between British and French something like 13 times in 20 years during the colonial era, so both influences are prominent. Your guest didn't mention specific waterfalls. I would highly recommend the Midlam Falls, accessible through the tiny village of Cochrane, where I lived with the Peace Corps, or from the other side, the cloud-like Laudat, where you start the Boiling Lake hike. Midlam has a fairy tale like pool at the bottom of the falls for swimming. Laudat, on the other hand, has a dwarf rainforest due to the altitude and wind, I believe, one of the many warm pools to swim in. There are several hot springs throughout the island, including Trafalgar Falls, where you can swim back and forth between the warm volcanic water and the cool mountain water. Another fall on the east coast is white from calcium, lime, or air bubbles, I don't know, but the whole river is milky color. I could go on forever about the food to eat and the other sites to visit. It's such an amazing place. So I would encourage you to go to the comments on that particular episode and read both of these entries in detail. Both of these were just reminders to me that one of the things I love about this show is the listeners that I have and how knowledgeable and obviously well-traveled you all are. So with that, we'll draw this episode to a close. I will be skipping again next week because I will be at the New Media Expo in Las Vegas. You happen to be in Las Vegas, let me know. Maybe we can get together. If you have a comment on this episode, something that you know about Kerala that we may have left out, feel free, like Zoe and Amanda did, to go to amateurtraveler.com and leave your comment on that episode. Or drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com or leave something on the discussion boards, amateurtraveler.com/board. As always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be.